Ron and Anian.
Can hybrid and electric vehicles be dangerous to work on? Next sentence. One word. Absolutely. No, she's a little bit dangerous. A little bit
dangerous. The Car Doctor.
We can't be that stupid that we're going to mount radar emitting devices into the front of a vehicle, and then it's following the vehicle from behind in the front. Are we being bombarded by radar? No, that we couldn't be that dumb, could we?
Want to be bad?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, welcome to the Father's Day edition of the Car Doctor, the second hour this weekend, as we kick off Father's Day and help celebrate Dad and all that the dads do and all that the moms do in place of dads to help take care of the kids and be the inspiration and be the way forward for so many generations. Always good to have a dad around in some way, shape, or form. Let's kick this hour off right off the bat, and let's go over to Audrey in Virginia. And keep in mind, we're giving away a $25 gift card today for O'Reilly Auto Parts. We're going to do it this hour. So let's go see what Audrey's got to say in Virginia and see if we can help her in her 98 Ford Mustang. Audrey, welcome to the Car Doctor.
Thank you.
You're welcome. What's going on?
Well, I got a new battery put in my car. Well, actually, someone who came to jumpstart it said that it did look like a new battery, but they jumpstarted it anyway. And I've been having problems where I wait a few days. I go out to my car. I'm retired, so I don't drive my car every day.
Right.
And I go to start it, and it's dead. And I've had it jump-started at least twice. And I was told by the place where I bought the battery that it could possibly be the alternator.
Well, listen, it could be something between the headlights and the taillights until they diagnose it. Nobody really knows. Did you have the problem?
Yeah.
Did you have the problem with the old battery in the car?
No.
Okay. So how long since the old battery was replaced and the new battery put in did the problem start? Did it start right away?
Well, sort of. I had the new battery, so-called new battery, put in on May 8th, just last month. And my neighbor helped me, and he said start it up, and it started right up. No hesitation at all.
Okay.
And I went to try it on May 18th, and it was dead. I think that was kind of my fault because I waited too long. But so then I, on the 28th, I had it jump-started, and it started up. And I ran it for about 15 minutes and just left it at that. And 5 days later, I thought I better go start it up again on June 2nd, and it was dead as a doorknob.
Okay.
Nothing, not even any clicks.
Okay. No discredit to your neighbor or his efforts or anybody trying to put a battery in this vehicle. One of the things a professional can do and should do,
yes,
whenever they replace a battery, is to consider, uh-huh, do they need to do a current draw test for battery replacement, so you avoid scenarios like this, because now you've got, you know, is it the battery or is it the vehicle? Did something change in the vehicle?
Uh-huh.
Could you have a bad,
uh-huh,
new battery? Sure, new means never ever worked in my world, you know, but a current draw test where they're going to measure to see if there is any current draw, something pulling electrically out of the battery while it's sitting there, would do you a world of good. The second thing I would,
uh-huh,
I would tell you to look at is, you know, what brand of battery was it? Just out of curiosity.
It's Duralast.
Okay. And they're decent batteries. I mean, batteries today, you know, most of them are pretty good if it's one of the name brands. The majority of batteries are, you know, out of the probably dozen and a half brands of batteries on the market today. They're made at one of three or two. I think it's two now, two battery plants in the continental United States, because, you know, it's not that they're spread out all over the place. Everybody contracts out. Just to show you how the industry is working, we ordered a case of Motorcraft FL910S oil filters the other day. They came to us, and the shipping label said from Purolator. So Purolator is making Motorcraft oil filters. I was just, wow. You know, which I kind of suspected, because the oil filter companies, everybody's making, you know, everybody else's filters today. Everybody's making everybody else's batteries. That being said, I'd be curious what the date code on this battery is. How old is this battery? Was this battery sitting on the shelf in the parts house where you got it? Has it been sitting there for any length of time? And did they rotate the stock around? For that matter, does this battery need to be charged? Never assume a battery you buy off the parts store shelf, especially going into a car that's going to sit for a length of time, is charged to the proper level. 15 minutes of running the car isn't enough. 45 minutes to an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, 45, 50 miles an hour, reasonable highway speeds, minimal amount of accessories on, to put some kind of a charge into that. Does the car sit Does the car sit outside or inside, Audrey?
Outside.
Okay. You know, one of the things you may want to consider if you're retired now and you're not going to be driving it all that much is there are devices out there, for example, like solar battery chargers. It would lay on the dashboard, okay? It would plug into the OBD2 diagnostic port, or you could just direct connect it to the battery, just run the cables, the wires under the hood, and it would just receive enough of a trickle charge to help maintain the battery. But I kind of don't want to do that until I know there's no problem in the vehicle. I would prefer a mechanic to do a current draw test. Okay. Do you understand what I mean when I say current draw test, Audrey?
A current draw test?
Yeah.
You mean like testing the battery, the voltage and all that stuff?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of like, did you ever wonder if the light's on in your refrigerator when you close the door?
Oh, I know it's not.
Well, it may be, right? But
I've opened my refrigerator door and clicked on that thing and the light goes out,
It goes out. But you see, we don't know that in the car. And a draw test will tell us if there's a bulb on pulling current and draining the battery. That's why that's important. All right? And that's why, I get it. We're trying to, you know, cut corners and we're looking for honesty in mechanics. And sometimes maybe it's not about spending money at a repair shop. Maybe we just don't know where to go. And that's the bigger issue. I think in a lot of cases, I would say that, you know, we've got to find a shop, somebody competent. Hey, can you do a current draw test? You know, it's going to take them half hour to 45 minutes maybe to start to finish, because they've got to go through the electrical system, alternator, starter, and so forth. But to just say the alternator's bad because the battery's going dead, you know, we're guessing.
It's just a possibility.
It's just one of the things on the list. So
The second time that I had my car jump started on, actually this past Wednesday, I did run it for about 50 minutes because the guy that said, you let it run for about 45, 50 minutes. So I did that exactly.
Right.
And when I came back out on 5 days later on June 2nd, it was like it was trying to turn over and it just would not.
Okay.
So, and then finally I got the clicking noise and I'm like, well, it's dead again.
Right, it's dead again. So, and that's what the draw test will tell you. You know what, Audrey, stay on the line. Tom's going to be getting your information. We're going to be sending out that $25 gift card to O'Reilly Auto Parts, O'Reillyauto.com. Go ahead.
I'll tell you what, you don't have to do that.
But
my father passed away way back in 1999.
Well, but you know what? We want to do that because we want to help you out. And, you know, you're probably a father and a mentor to somebody, I can tell. just listening to you. And this way you can possibly go down to your local O'Reilly Auto Parts. And it's very sweet of you to say that. But I can listen, I can tell a good father image when I hear one. And, it'll help you out. You can go down there and pick out maybe a solar charger for the car or if you need another battery or something along those lines. So stay on the line. Let Tom get your information. We'll get that $25 gift card to O'Reilly Auto Parts coming your way. And you be well, dear. And if you need any more information, you give us a call. 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this.
It on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now back to Ron.
Hey, let's I see Audrey is still here. Audrey, do you miss me already? No, she's not there. Is Audrey there, Tom? No. Okay, let me go back to my, I was going to read this email that I've got. I'm talking about 1 in 5 electric vehicle owners. Did you see this article? It's kind of all over the place, written by Dominic Reuter. 1 in 5 electric vehicle owners in California switched back to gas because charging their cars is a hassle, research shows. And the article starts out, and it makes sense, right? In roughly 3 minutes, you can fill the gas tank of a Ford Mustang and have enough range to go about 300 miles. But the electric Mustang, it goes on to says, it just an hour plugged into a household outlet will give, and it did. They took Bloomberg automotive analyst Kevin Tynan just 3 miles of range. So after an hour of charging through a household outlet. And part of the issue is that they're finding that, there's level one, there's level two, and then there's the supercharged version of a Tesla charger. Here, the article talked about, standard home outlets generally deliver 120 volts, powering what electric vehicle aficionados call level one charging, while the higher powered specialty connections at 240 volts are known as level two. Tesla's superchargers can fully charge its cars in a little over an hour, running on 480 volts. Audrey, that was just on the show, sounded a little older, right? Audrey was probably, I'm going to guess and say, in her 70s or 80s. She's going to deal with charging an electric vehicle? Maybe. She's driving a 98 Mustang. She's a pretty hip little old lady, I guess, at that point. But, you have to say to yourself, where is the convenience and what is the convenience? I don't know if people will want to deal with it, and evidently they're not. This article is talking about how people that are driving electric vehicles are also wanting to go back to a gas-powered vehicle because of the inconvenience of trying to charge an electric vehicle and range issues. Of those who switched, 70% lacked access to level two charging at home, the article continued, and slightly fewer than that lacked level two connections at their workplace. If you don't have level two, it's almost impossible, said Tynan, who has tested a wide range of makes and vehicles over the years for his research. Even with the faster charging, a Chevy Bolt he tested needed nearly 6 hours to bring its range back up to 300 miles from empty, something that takes him just minutes at the pump with his family SUV. And this is the part I don't get, that we're going to still try and do this. I've said this before, right? Cars were meant to be mass transportation devices. They were meant to, feed the masses. And part of the reason why internal combustion engines came about was because, truth be told, I've talked about this, because of the horse manure problem in the big cities, because horses were the method of transportation at the turn of the 1800s into the 1900s, and it was a health issue, a sewage problem, and everybody was walking down the street with manure piles, and we just wanted to get away into something basic transportation. Cars weren't envisioned they were going to have heated seats, heated cup holders, video games, and all the things that cars have now, and the electronics. The electric vehicle is just taking it to the next level, and how many of the average consumer are going to be able to or want to be able to deal with that? And that's what this article points out. So it's interesting. It then goes on and talks about public charging stations may look like the electric version of the gas station, but nearly 2/3 of drivers in the survey said they didn't use them. Exactly why they didn't use the public stalls is not specified. Electric vehicles, the article continues, have come a long way in recent years in terms of range, safety, and comfort. Sure, no argument. They have. They've come a great long way. But it's been noted that very little change has happened in how they are recharged. Researchers warn this trend could make it harder to achieve electric vehicle sales targets in California and other countries and growth of the market overall. Well, I think that goes without saying. Listen, I'm going to make a public statement. I don't think electric vehicles on a wholesale level, on an across-the-board level, is going to occur in 15 years. I think there's another game afoot. I think they're looking to get us to want to change a percentage of the population of the vehicle fleet so it becomes 5 or 10% electric vehicles, or it becomes higher use in areas where there's more pollution and urban issues, smog, and things like that. But to make everybody into an electric vehicle in 15 years, and this article is kind of backing that up, I don't think we have the technology, and I don't think they've got the ability to produce the technology. GM set a target of an all-electric fleet by 2030, while Ford recently unveiled its, in quotes, game-changing Lightning F-150 electric pickup truck and prioritized production of its electric Mustangs to continue. You know, we had a call 2 weeks ago. Was it 2 weeks ago we had a caller that called in and talked to us about, and he brought up a good point. So an electric F-150, if you're towing a trailer with it, is your range going to be shortened? Or if you're plowing snow, is your range going to be shortened because everything is going to be working harder? So how do you calculate for that? And that makes an interesting point. Are you going to, if plow vehicles are going to be electric vehicles, listen, when I'm out in the plow truck and you're trying to keep ahead of the storm, you pull into a gas station, charge the truck, fill the truck up with gas, and drive out, and you're ready in 10 minutes. With an electric vehicle, are you going to be sitting there an hour? At best, right? They say Tesla can charge their vehicles in an hour. In an hour, I don't get it. I don't see it. I just... There's something wrong with this picture. So just stay tuned. More to come. Another article that came out, that this one came to us via research. Kathy, she's out doing her job again, sending me too much information. Talks about how drum brakes are going to be the way forward for electric vehicles because old-fashioned drum brakes may be the way to create regenerative braking, due to their low cost, their lack of complexity, their corrosion resistance, and they're an excellent model for regenerative braking. This article came to us via Auto. I think I'm trying to give credit to the article here. Oh, autoblog.com. You can just find it. Just get out to autoblog.com and look up the why old-fashioned drum brakes may be the way of the future. Drum brakes are an original technology that have been around almost as long as cars have. The article starts out, first developed in 1899. This style of brake can be found in some of the very first automotive prototypes, but they began falling out of favor with automakers in the mid-60s when shorter stopping disc brake systems became widespread. These particular brake systems are more powerful and faster stopping than drums and are quite necessary as front brakes. With many cars, they require 60-80% of slowing a vehicle's momentum compared to the rear, which is why you'll never find a new car with front drums anymore. It's true. And I wonder, you know, we're going to go back to drum brakes, what that weight's going to do. You know, I really believe that the electric vehicle future is there, but to a large degree, people are, well, it's going to be a little bit of a mystery. We'll see what they do and see what really happens going forward. I don't think they're telling us everything we need to know. So, that being said, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We're going to pull over and take a pause. I'll be back right after this. We're on the Car Doctor. Tom had an interesting comment about electric vehicles. He just pointed out to me during the break that he travels from Newburgh, New York, which is, 45 minutes outside of New York City, up the New York State Thruway. But when he goes to Buffalo, he has to stop three quarters of the way to gas up. What's he going to do with an electric vehicle in terms of, you know, it won't make it. It doesn't have the range. And is he going to have additional cost added on to his trip so that he passes it on to his client? Is it actually going to cost us more money? And that's an interesting point, because how will it change? Will the electric vehicle future change the cosmetics and the makeup of the country, in the sense that, you know, I remember traveling with Dad, you know, taking family vacations in different destinations and the road trip to nowhere, where you would always stop. It was Holiday Inn and Howard Johnson's, and you would gas up once during the day and once at the end of the day. So are you going to have to change it to where you're just going to charge up once at the end of the day and stay wherever you are for the night? So will electric charging stations be sprouting up on the interstates? And if you think about it, interstates are far from what? Civilization. So are we going to have to truck in the electric charge, electricity over power lines? We're going to have to build all new charging stations to reach these remote locations where the interstates go, that we're going to be able to do that in order to charge the vehicles. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I just keep thinking about it. I just want to see how they do that, doing it. Yeah, and then Tom also made a comment about the article about people in California are buying gas cars after driving an electric vehicle. Well, yeah, because they're not charging. What's going on in Texas this week, right? Wasn't there something in Texas this week that because of the heat wave, there isn't enough electricity to run all the air conditioners, and California's already going through it? And what, we're going to magically produce enough electricity to get electric vehicles recharged, and everybody's going to be in the electric vehicle because they won't have air conditioning in their house because they won't be able to turn it on. We should get James LeBrecq back on to talk to us more about, you know, the electric vehicle future and where that's going. I still think about his comments from his interview 2 months ago, where he said that in the state of Maine, if the state of Maine went all electric vehicle now, in this current day, at the current vehicle registration rate, they would have to build 7 nuclear power plants. And that statistic just stuck with me, that they'd have to build 7 nuclear power plants to generate enough electricity, the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity, in order to, charge the fleet. That and the one about, about 12 billion with a B pounds of batteries that have to be recycled every year. And he said, don't worry about it. We don't have enough lithium to make 12 billion pounds of batteries right now. So I just don't see it. Old school technology. We had a 66. Well, we're still working on it, as a matter of fact. We've got a 66 Cadillac Eldorado in the shop this week, and we're dealing with some brake pulling issues that developed. The car went about 182 miles in the past 7 years. It's been sitting a lot, and the owner doesn't drive it a whole lot. Yeah, think about that. 182 miles in the past 7 years, and we're dealing with a brake pull that we're kind of picking our way through and solving it. The hardest part is finding parts, because, no pun intended, it's just difficult. There's just not a lot of stuff out there anymore. And, you know, going through and found a set of wheel cylinders. Thank God Dorman reproduced them. So we're putting some Dorman wheel cylinders in this. We're going to take the originals and send them out and get them brass sleeved. So he'll have a backup set, and he can use those if he wants in the future as well. But getting parts for the older vehicles is tough. But it's sort of a lesson in manufacturing when you look at an old car. The next time you're at a car show, look at that old car. Look at the detail. There's a little emblem on the back rear quarter of this 66 Cadillac Eldorado, the Cadillac, I call it the esprit de corps, the colored flag logo of, you know, that was the Cadillac symbol for years and years. It was on all the Caddies, and then it's got the wreath, the chrome wreath tied around it. To make all that, to make all these components and parts, you know, the die makers that, you know, painlessly and forever just sat there and etched out the molds to produce these parts, and we don't do it anymore. Everything's just stamped out. Everything's plastic. Everything is recycled. Everything is throwaway. Just a grand period. I think that's the attraction for old cars too. I'm learning that it just doesn't take you back to a place where you were, but it shows you the manufacturing capability of the country at the time and the depth of detail that went into making a car. Just absolutely crazy stuff. So just something to point out. The next time you're at a car show, take a look at, you know, appreciate the car for the piece of jewelry that it might be, because some of these dashboards are just so magnificent. We've had a few air conditioning jobs run through the shop in the past couple of weeks too. And it's interesting. Some were just straight up recharges. They lost anywhere from 2 to 7 or 8 ounces of refrigerant. It wasn't a big deal. But we've had a bad blend door actuator. We've had a leaking condenser. We've had a leaking condenser high side to the compressor line. We've had, let's see, we've had a couple of strange ones. Cooling fans not coming on. And it tells me that air conditioning, to me, is the hardest problem, not to diagnose, but to explain. And this is my point. I want you to walk into your repair shop when and if you have an air conditioning problem and just tell them, my air conditioning's not cold. Not, I need Freon. By the way, it's not called Freon anymore. It hasn't been called Freon in a long time, but everybody seems to still call it Freon. Freon, and actually, Freon, even when it was R12, Freon was a trade name. It was a brand name developed by DuPont. You can look it up. You can Google it. But Freon really wasn't what it was called. It was R12 refrigerant. And DuPont's version of it was Freon. Well, that was the brand name. But don't tell the mechanic you automatically need Freon, because you may not. There's a reasonable chance that your 134 or your 1234YF car will not. It's got a leak. It's got a mechanical problem. It's got an electrical problem. It's got something that's preventing it from operating properly and doing what it's supposed to do. So just be mindful of that. And, you know, consider that you've got to do things one step at a time. Chances are the shop is going to have to do a service, an AC service to it. And sometimes that's the only way. We've been using the Mahle 134 machine, 134A refrigerant machine, quite a bit in the past 2 weeks. Very nice unit. All right. Stone quiet. It's as quiet as a church. It has the ability to do automatic AC service. Dial in your time, dial in your weight, dial in your leak check, push one button, hook it up, walk away, and it does it all flawlessly. And then it beeps along the way. It tells you, you know, hey, I finished this step, I'm going on to the next one. I finished this step, I'm going on to the next one. And then when it's done, it's like your kids. It just sits there and beeping and making noise until you pick them up and say, okay, we're done. But Mahle's got it going on. If you're in the market for an AC machine, you should take a look at Mahle. Definitely very nice stuff. Let's pull over and take a pause. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor, and I'll be back right after this.
She's real fine, my 409. She's real fine, my 409, my 409.
Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Listener writes in, hey, Ron, I'm wondering if you have any great Father's Day stories about your father. I heard you talking in the first hour, and I was just wondering, do you have anything that you remember as a kid? George in Georgia, you know. Geez, George, you know, there's so many dad stories. It's you know, it's tough. I don't remember them as much as I used to. I think one of my favorites is when I was probably every bit of 4 or 5 years old, Dad put me on his lap in the Volvo, and I would steer the Volvo and move the gear shift lever every time he pushed the clutch in. And, you know, I learned about manual transmission and clutch operation that way. And it was just, I don't know that got me hooked on being a mechanic. I think that got me hooked on cars, that cars were just so neat and fascinating. It was, you know, the movement of the gear shift knob and the clutch pedal, and there was some coordination things going on. And I was just so amazed at the way he handled that piece of machinery that, you know, it just got me more curious. I think what got me going with regards to being a mechanic was, it for me personally, it was my way of, you know, so many kids were better at sports and so many different things, but it was helped me identify myself with one of the talents that the big man above gave me, that I was able to do something and do it by myself. It made me the quarterback of my own little football team, so to speak. So, you know, that kind of made me feel good. But that I got from Dad, too. So just Dad stories. Tom writes in, we had a question from a caller. What is the going rate for R12 refrigerant? If you can find it, I've seen the little cans, the little 15-ounce cans of R12 refrigerant going anywhere from $200 to $300 a can. So I'm seeing all kinds of crazy numbers. So if you find some and you need some, you know, hang on to it, because they ain't making it anymore. Hey, Ron, I listen to your radio program on occasion on my local radio station, WDRC in Hartford, Connecticut, which they carry on a delayed basis. What are your thoughts on undercoating, rust-proofing a new vehicle, pickup truck with Linex or some of the rust-proofers that they carry at the auto parts stores, or are there any commercial rust-proofers that you know of? I remember years ago we had Rusty Jones and Auto Armor. My 1987 Dodge Diplomat had Auto Armor on it when it was brand new, and it is still fabulous. although I never drive it in the winter. My 2008 Ranger with 51,000 miles on it is in pretty rough shape. It's out in the winter storm, so I can plow the various family driveways. It's amazing how much of these road chemicals they pour on for each storm. It's amazing how this stuff sticks to the underside of the truck, even when you try to hose it off. I can't see spending $35,000 plus for a new truck that will rust out in 12 years. I'm 62, and if I purchase a new truck, I want it to last 20 years. How do I protect it? Martin. Great question, Marty. You know, listen, I'm a little bit of a fanatic when it comes to rust proofing. I'm not so much a fan of undercoating and rust proofing. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I've always, of late, I've taken the paint approach. When I purchased the plow truck, and you might have heard me tell this story before, I've stripped the wheel wells out of it. I stripped everything out of it that I could. I got it down to the very barest of metal and Benjamin Moore low luster alkali paint. I've painted the entire undercarriage of the truck, and then I've rust-proofed patched aerosol spray, rust-proof patch in various, you know, various places of undercoating. I think the key with undercoating is you've got to get it all, or there's got to be protection at all levels, because once the chemical or once the moisture gets past an open or unprotected area on any vehicle, I think the game's over, because it just sort of creeps along under the protective material and there's nothing you can do about it at that point, and it creates a bigger problem. I agree with you, spending a lot of money on a vehicle to let it rust out. The problem is, you, as you say, your 08 Ranger is rusted out to the point that, you know, or it's rusting out to the point that it's in pretty rough shape. So, you know, where's the trade-off? Yes, I agree. We are putting too much chemical on the roads in all states, it seems, no matter where you go, which is sort of mind-boggling, because we've got vehicles with all-wheel drive, all-wheel steering, all-wheel braking, and we still put enough chemical on the roadways that it makes you wonder what it's doing to the environment, although I know they'll tell you that, you know, it's environmental safe chemical, so it doesn't cause a problem. But I think you've got to do some undercoat. Martin, back to your question, I think you've got to do some undercoating. I think you've got to do some painting, proper care, and I think washing off. I think those three steps will help promote the life of the vehicle. I wouldn't worry about the truck rusting out in 12 years or so, because at the rate things are going, they're going to stop making parts for most things after 7. So as long as you get 7 years out of it, you're good. And you'll just have to factor in the expense of a new vehicle sooner rather than later. Just my perspective, just getting ready for the future. 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Anning, the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back. Ron Anning, the Car Doctor, winding it down this hour. You know, the one other thing that I thought was interesting we haven't talked about at all is the way tools are changing. So I've been going through the back room of the shop, and I've got a collection, and there are some things there that I thought would always be worth money. I've been trying to sell my breakout box and breakout box adapters for the original Ford EEC 4 engine control systems. EEC 4 was produced from 83 until 95. But, you know, you start adding it up, and you go 95, 2005, 2015. Those cars are anywhere from 15 to 25 years old, and they're just not out there. I've had breakout box adapters and stuff up on eBay for the past month, and you know, $45, can't give it away. Just nobody wants it, and they were $400 tools back in the day. It's just crazy the way technology is driving certain cars into you know, non-existence. And I guess, you know, they're getting older, but nothing survived, right? It seems like a lot of these vehicles that we used to work on a regular basis, the simple jobs that we used to work on a regular basis, just haven't survived. We also worked on this week, I should point out, 77 Pontiac Trans Am, the Smokey and the Bandit car, black Trans Am, gold trim, Anthony's car. We love Anthony. Anthony's a good guy. He's listening. You know, we told him to get this. He got that, and that. We did a power steering pump and pressure hoses this week. A little bit of a toughie because the original power steering hose, this kind of annoys me. The original power steering hose, the replacement wasn't exactly like the original hose. There was just enough tweaks in it that it just sort of fit, but not really. It could have, you know, which I always wonder why the aftermarket or why the manufacturers do that, because this way worked, this way is sort of okay. You know, is it a we don't care anymore, the vehicle's out of warranty and it's your problem now type of mentality? I don't know. But it was fun working on something with a carburetor again, and, you know, basics. just nuts and bolts. It just took a little bit of time because everything has to be trial fit and looked at once, then looked at twice, and then hooked up, and then made wet. And then once you put fluid in it, burp it and bleed it, and then you go take it for a ride and you look for Sally Fields, which we didn't find. So, well, didn't even have the cowboy hat. So I know what I have to get for Father's Day next year. By the way, speaking of gifts for Father's Day, did anybody see, totally off topic here, we'll close it out here, but sort of, it's a mechanical thing. The Royal Navy has this jetpack. There's a video up on Facebook where they're talking about it's these couplings that you strap to your wrists and you wear the jetpack on your arm and you can fly like Iron Man. It's really kind of cool. I bet I can make it faster. But, you know, just makes you wonder the technology and where it's going. I don't know. Better put that technology into electric vehicles because we're sure going to need it. Something's got to change. Hey, it's been a pleasure. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I have. Everyone out there, have a great Father's Day. Honor those that are leading the way. And till the next time, remember, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.